This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, you snuck out on us last week, Mike.
Well, I had to get away from you, Dale. I'm sorry. In this little room all the time with all these buttons and stuff, it drives me insane.
Absolutely. I think I showered today, though.
That's good. That's good. I did, too, I think, 3 days ago. I'm not sure.
Oh, we're good.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to this crazy show. And it's about landscaping and gardening and how to build things and how to create things. And if you have any questions, please feel free to call 673-4464. Pop your question out, and I'll give you an answer. And 90% of it will be correct. And if I don't get the other 10%, you can call back next week, and I'll have the rest of the answer. No, I'm just kidding. I know just about everything in landscaping.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Gee whiz. It was kind of interesting, you know, in our warm summer days that we've had, there's a lot of stress and strain on plants and things, and I've been trying to relieve that. And the other night, my daughter from Texas called, and she lives about 20 miles southwest of Austin, Texas. And I said, well, hi, how's it going? She said, oh, it's raining so hard you can't even believe it, Dad. And she says, we're getting up to 3 inches of rain, and the creeks are running, and Houston is already flooded. I says, you kidding me? She said, no, it's been raining and raining and raining. It's just pounding down. And she sent a video thing on her iPhone to my wife. So I saw the picture, and you can hear the rain. It's just thundering down, and it's just, oh. It's amazing.
Well, send some our way.
Yeah, well, that's what I tried, but she wouldn't do it.
She wouldn't do it.
No, I even tried to bribe her, and it didn't work. I said, hey, I'll give you a free tree if you send me this.
There you go.
Rain.
Wouldn't do it.
Yeah, but anyway, in Texas, it's where she lives, and a lot of other places down in that area, it's mostly arid land, but so far this year, they've gotten more rain than the Pacific Northwest. Yeah. And
that's terrible.
Where she lives, it's Canyon Live Oak and West Texas Red Cedar are the predominant tree species. And there might be an occasional oak here and there, but those are the things. Like, we have madrone everywhere and fir. Well, they've got those two varieties. And she lives in the country, and so they're surrounded by that kind of thing. And that's all that'll grow there because they're a drought. They can live in a drought condition. They can live in hot and dry. So maybe all this rain will kill them because they've been overwatered or something. And that's what I'm going to talk about today, of course.
Flash flood. Is that what they call that?
Yeah, flash flood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A reason I bring that up, many decades ago, I was picking beans, and I heard a woman from Texas talking about the flash floods they got down there in Texas, and that's one of the reasons why she got out of the area.
Well, my daughter, where her house is, she's not in danger of any of that because she's kind of up on a little hill. But the road systems from there to, say, Austin, which I said is about 20, 25 miles away, two-lane and these hills there, it's called the Texas Hill Country, and they're kind of rolling little hills. They're nothing like what we have around
here.
Not
like Roberts Mountain.
No. And so the road follows the contour of the slope and the topography. And, in a lot of the bottom parts, there's a little creek running through. Not much, but those little creeks, when it rains that much, they come up very quickly, and flow over the top of the road.
Get out of my way.
I'm flowing to the ocean. Leave me alone. But, that's how that is. And, it'll rain like that for 2, 3, 4, 5 days. And then they're what do we do now? I don't know. But as we've gone through our, 100 and whatever it was a week or so ago, 114 and 112.
That was too hot.
No, that's ridiculously hot.
Now, that's Texas weather.
Not really.
No?
No. Maybe out in East Texas or West Texas down in the southern part there, down by the Mexican border maybe, because that's more desert desert area with cactus and stuff like that, you know, and close to New Mexico.
You can tell I've never been to Texas.
Well, you know, it's actually, there's parts of it that are very beautiful, and there's parts of it that are very wild, and a lot of big ranches and mm-hmm. agriculture down there, too. So they've got the water to grow stuff.
Isn't that where... He just had a birthday the other day. George W. Bush. Doesn't he have a ranch down there?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the name of the town, but he's got a big one out there somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah. He never invited me.
He didn't?
No, I was disappointed.
Must have got lost in the mail.
Probably. But, you know, as I'm looking around and going from place to place, and as I drive around Douglas County, I've noticed more heat damage to plants this year than in the past. Mm. And when I say heat damage, it's... You see certain plants that are kind of mainstays to the landscape and even at the nursery, and we're rationing our watering now. We're keeping the plants alive, but we're not wasting any water at all.
Right.
And some of the hydrangeas during that real hot period, you know, had big green leaves, and now there'd be two or three brown ones just kind of because the heat was so intense.
Right.
And then they're sitting on the ground there in the parking lot, and consequently the parking lot absorbs heat, so it's just a constant heat thing. Even
transferring.
Yeah, yeah. And but even in yards and places that we do maintenance at, and where we're landscaping and stuff like that, some of the plants that have been in for, oh gosh, years, you can tell that they're really stressed. And even if you're getting watered, they're still stressed because mm-hmm. the air temp is so
dry,
hot.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's just part of the deal. So, but for those of you that are maybe experiencing some of that, it might be a good idea to bump up your watering time every morning. I heard one guy on the radio talking about watering, and he said, well, watering in the evening is better. Well, I totally disagree with that. And it's okay to water in the evening, but I think if you water early in the morning, early meaning 5 or 6 in the morning, and have your, if a sprinkler system, have it set up so that's when it goes, so that by 7 o'clock all your place is watered, mm-hmm. the water is soaked down in the root systems, and then as the sun comes up, you know, it can't rob the plants of the water so much as where in the evening, if you water, even when the sun goes down, it's still extremely warm. And say you water, but there's still a lot of evaporation going.
Yeah.
So consequently, not all that water is going down into the root systems where it belongs.
Yeah.
You know, a big percentage of it is being evaporated right into the sky. It's
no
gone.
Good. That's no good.
And so you're bumping up your water bill and not doing your plant materials any good. But... watering in the morning, I think it's a good idea, unless you wait till the sun is, you know, right before dark. That would be a good time because the heat kind of peaks and there's a little bit of a breeze and so
I've noticed that.
Yeah, and so the evaporation process is not as intense. So
either
late, you know, 9 o'clock and 10 midnight for crying out loud. The best of both worlds. Put it on.
Midnight at the Oasis.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, the past 2 weeks have been hot and above our normal, but not crazy insane hot. It's just I've seen it hot like that here before in the past. Back mm-hmm. I've seen it that way in the 60s and the 70s. And
yep.
There have been, because back in the 66, I guess, 1966, 65, 66. I was a lifeguard at the Roseburg.
The swimming pool up there?
Yeah, it used to be, now it's a school.
Yeah, Rose.
Rose Elementary, yeah.
I used to swim in that.
Really? I probably saved your life half a dozen
probably.
Times.
Probably.
Because you were probably a troublemaker.
I was. Well, I was in the fifth grade. But
well, I was teaching swimming lessons in the morning and then lifeguarding from noon to 9 at night. So, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, you may have taught me how to swim.
Well, I taught lots of 9-year-old kids and 10-year-old kids and 6-year-old kids, and I even taught the first Job Corps group because they had just opened up in mm-hmm. Wolf Creek,
yeah.
And they sent a bunch of guys, I think 6 or 7 of them down to learn how to swim.
Yeah.
And I taught them. They're all bigger than me. They're all from like Chicago or LA or, you know, and we got along great, and they all learned how to swim.
I remember them coming down. Yeah. They were, everybody was bigger than me at the time.
Yeah. I know, these guys were huge. Anyway, that's not the gardening show, is it?
No. We got off track into the water.
It's the heat that's done it to me. Okay, but, you know, the watering is important, and just be cognizant of when you do it. The time of day is very important. And, you know, and that's on shrubbery. On lawns, on lawn watering, you gotta do that as usual. Just don't mow your lawn as often. Keep the grass shaggier and longer, because that will preserve the water that you put on it the night before or the day before. Are we being interrupted?
Well, we're getting rock and rolled next
door. Rock and roll. We're getting rocked and rolled here. But
courtesy of Sam FM.
Yeah, and I know I've said a lot of these things in the past many times, but repetition is good, because some people, you can tell them 10 times and they still don't get it. And then there's always new listeners, and it's just really important to be reminded of not wasting water and being very frugal, but doing the job at the same time. And like I say, if I've seen lawns cut way too short. They're yellow, they're brown, they have a hard time recuperating, and the weeds kind of have a tendency to take over. And so keep your lawns longer than normal and water, again, or maybe twice a week, but do a good soak, and they'll live, and they'll make it through the really, really hot times in here.
Yeah, or 2 days of summer.
Yeah, and when you do this, you're preserving that soil moisture. We got a break?
No.
Oh, I thought
I'm just feeling the
you
vibrations.
You had the buttons. You had your hands on the buttons. And stuff.
I'm feeling the good vibrations.
So now, if you're adding more plants to your landscaping, look for tough, drought-resistant type plants. Don't go with the nice things that you know, flower so much and do so well, but because it's cooler and it's, get the tough ones, get those, and there are still some color things, that you can get. Boy, that music loud.
Oh yeah. Can you feel the good vibes?
Not yet. But here's a few examples to consider. You can see the Oriental poppies. Now, they like the heat, and they'll do well, and they come in some outrageous colors if you want something that's going to be colorful in your yard. And then geraniums. Geraniums are tough. They take the heat. They love the sun. They'll keep blooming, and as long as you give them minimal water to keep them alive, they do well. And hens and chicks, those are the little things that crawl around on the ground, and they're kind of a semi-arid desert plant, but they grow well up here. They make good fillers for in between plants, or good fillers for pots and containers. But you know, there's a lot of different varieties there. Then there's a honeysuckle vine. Honeysuckle vine does a really great job, and it doesn't seem to need any help at all once it's established, and lots of flowers. And then you got dwarf mugo pine and other dwarf conifers. They're very tough. If you water them, you know, and I'm talking the first year in the ground, that's when they're the most susceptible to life or death, if you will. And as long as you give them a deep soak once a week at the maximum, they're going to do fine. The second year, even if it gets hot again, you know, a couple times a month is ample, and then after that, they're pretty much on their own. So any of your conifers, your junipers, you know, those kinds of things, they don't need a whole lot of help or care.
We got a call.
We got a call. Okay.
All right. Let's see if I can get them on here. Oh, oh.
Oh, shoot.
I guess they didn't want to hear the music.
Could we ask those guys next door to turn it down a little bit?
Well, it's Rochelle. Good luck.
Oh.
Hey, we got to take a break now. So
okay. We'll be back.
As we hear fun, fun, fun with the Beach Boys in the background. We'll be back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, right here.
We are back with the second segment of the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show.
With the rock and roll show in the background.
Yeah, with the rock and roll music in the background. You know, it must be graffiti or something.
It must be. But hey, we got a phone call back.
Okay, well, we'll take that phone call.
Well, let's take the call. Hey, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I didn't know that you were a lifeguard. That's pretty cool, the things we do in our youth, right?
Yeah.
I have a question. You know, with the watering, I'm having a lot of weeds that are coming up. And do you recommend, like, a Castellan or, you know, something like that once I hoe it all up and then put Castellan down? Does that really work?
Can you turn your radio down a little bit? We can't quite figure out what you're saying.
Yeah, there's
no. Okay, can you hear me now?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay. So my question was, with all the weeds coming up from watering in my flower bed, do you recommend Casserine, like,
yes,
you know, some kind of weed deterrent like that? I don't like to put plastic, etc. down.
Yeah.
But once I weed them out of there, does, like, a Casserine really work?
Yeah, Casseron works. It's really good. You just have to be careful when you apply it. Make sure you wear gloves and, say, long sleeves and maybe even a face mask. They're readily available now. You don't want to breathe any of it in, and don't do it on a windy day, and don't get it on the plants. But you can put it all through the bark mulch, and if it's clean, it'll knock out probably a good 80% of any weed material that wants to come back.
That comes back up. Excellent. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You're sure welcome. Thank you for the call.
Okay. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
All righty. There we are. Waiting for you to call now.
Who, me?
Yeah. 673-4464. Got it. 541 in front of all those.
Yeah, I thought you knew that. I only said it 700 times now.
Well, I got all of these digits in my mind from the other station.
You're digitized, huh?
Yeah. In more ways than one.
But. Yeah. Well, we've got a big fire, of course, going up the North Umpqua, going the other way. But in this current climate, you know, where fire is a possibility, you need to look at your existing shrubs. If you've been in a home for a long time and your shrubs have grown and they're large, you have to look at them with a critical eye and ask yourself some questions. Are they overgrown? And if so, how much? Are they out of control? Are they too close together? Are they too close to the house? And if so, you know, create some space. Prune them down half size, maybe eliminate some of them that are growing too close together. It's a way of helping fireproof your property. I live in the woods, of course, but I don't have any shrubbery growing up against my house at all. The nearest shrubbery is at least 10 feet away, and it's you know, water's right there, readily available. Mm-hmm. Most of it is in pots. I have a few ground covers in the ground, but you gotta think about that because of you never know what's going to happen as far as lightning or some dumb bunny running down your road throws a cigarette butt out, there's some maniac wanting to start fires. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff happens. And so if you've got an old landscape, you need to, like I say, look at it very critically. What can you do? How can you do it? Is there a way that you can thin things out, get them off the side of the house or off the side of the garage, and create some space around there so some air can circulate? And, you know, you take out all the dead branches and that kind of thing. And let's say you have an 8-foot shrub, maybe a photinia or the red leaf shrub that everybody uses for a hedge. And they're, you know, 8 feet tall, 10 feet tall. Cut them down about 5 feet. You're not going to hurt them. Cut back the sides of them, and so there's no branches poking out, and cut the tops down. And what they'll do is they'll just generate new growth, and like I say, if they're too close together, thin them out. Get rid of them. Pull them. You can always add something later, but it's good for, it's just good practice for your property. To, you don't want to, you know, we've seen the fires in the past, like down there in Talent and the, those areas where they burned the whole places down. Well, they had, those were old mobile home parks, and they had a lot of shrubbery, a lot of landscaping, and that's, and it just goes through there like you know, I was gonna say like wildfire, exactly what it is. Yeah. And and destroys everything in its wake. So it's
and fire likes those old mobile homes, it seems.
Yeah, because of the materials that they're built with.
Yeah.
So you wanna also, like I say, create some kind of a fire break so that you have some break between your home and the landscape. And and it's amazing because as I drive around, I'm looking at all these landscapes. I'm in neighborhoods. I see stuff all the time, and I see hundreds of landscapes that are overgrown with dead branches right against the home, right against the wooden fence, overhanging a deck or a front porch or something like that. And I'm thinking, they ought to prune that stuff away. Number one, your plants will be healthier, and number two, you're protecting or helping to protect your home from, in the event of a fire or something like that. That's exactly how it happens. And a well spaced planting plan is much more attractive than one that's planted too close. And that's the biggest mistake a lot of folks make when they landscape their own homes, and even some landscape contractors who supposedly should know better, plant way too many plants, because the more plants you go that you plant, the higher the price of the job is. Well, if that's your motive, then your motive is wrong. Mm-hmm. You should landscape and plant so that what's that plant going to look like in 4 years or 5 years or 10 years, and space them out accordingly. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Now getting back to watering, do we have a break yet or not? All right. Getting back to watering, first, mature plants, of course, that have been in the ground several years need little or no water. I mean, that's just the way it is. Maybe once a week, maybe once every 10 days, a soaking with a hose or something like that. That's, you know, to get them through the hump, to get them over the hottest part of the summer until we get into a fall pattern and hopefully a lot of rain. But they're tough.
And like Texas rain.
Yeah, like Texas rain, for crying out loud. Now, new plants, let's say you bought a few little shrubs or something, and you're going to plant them and all that. Now, new plants are going to need, you know, water maybe twice a week maximum. And you're going to want to direct it right to the root ball. You don't want to just kind of wholesale spray it with a sprinkler system. And flowers, of course, like petunias and marigolds and geraniums, they're going to need water a little bit more often because of their shallow root systems, and they're not that vigorous. And there's plenty of them out there for sale, and so people are still buying them. We're still selling them at the nursery, and I give these, when I'm there, I give those kinds of instructions to people who buy plants, and so does my staff, about watering and how much to water. You water them every day, you're going to rot the roots, you're going to kill the plants. But if you do it every 2 or 3 days, and you do it in the evening, and you just give them enough to keep them alive and healthy, that's all they need. And you're not spending a whole bunch of money on water that's being wasted, if you will. And like I say, water, and direct the water right to where the stem enters the ground, and that's where the mass root system is. That's where it'll do the best. If you wholesale water and just kind of spray all the leaves and stuff like that, it does not get down to the root system, and that's where it's extremely important. And like I say, I water at home with a hose. I don't have a sprinkler system. I want to see how much water is getting into my plants. I want to see how much is going into that potted plant or that tree or something like that. And of course, I direct the water right at the base of the plant, let it soak in, and then I do it again. So I know that the water, that's why I only have to water once a week, because I know I watered it amply when I did water, and it's not going to need anything for another week, maybe 10 days. Like I said, watering the leaves doesn't help except to wash off the dust or the bugs. And the point being, leaf watering doesn't help the root system of the plant at all. It's no benefit to the plant because the roots are what, I mean, it cools the leaves off, let's put it that way. And it does, if there's dust, if you live on a dirt road like I do, yeah, you get accumulated dust, you rinse off the dust, you know, it's a plant, it's healthier plant for it. Or if there's a few bugs in it, and if I see bugs, I'll give them a little bit of high pressure water off my hose, knock them off, and that's my herbicide treatment for my plants. I don't spray them with anything.
Well, it works.
It works, yeah. Why mess with it? Now, if you have a sprinkler system, turn it on manually and watch the watering pattern and take note of how much time each zone is on. Just stand there and look at it.
Yeah.
And after the zone goes off, check the soil around the plants to see how deeply the water actually penetrated the soil around the base of the plant. And at the same time you're watching and seeing, well, that one's not working, or this one is not working as well, or it should be shooting over to this end, it's not doing it. But let's say you on shrub beds, you have this system on for 15 minutes. Okay, you watch it for 15 minutes. How's it look? Okay, turn it off, then go randomly pick a few of the plants that were watered, dig down 3 or 4 inches into the soil right there at the base of the plant, and if it's dry down there, you know you haven't done it any good. You've kind of maybe kept it alive, but that's about it. But if it's damp, if you dig down 4 to 6 inches and it's damp, you know that you've accomplished the mission properly. And but if not, then that 15-minute watering maybe have to turn into a 20-minute watering or a 25-minute watering, but you're only going to do it once a week. That's the benefit. You're not watering every day for 5 minutes. Watering every day, I don't know how many times I've said this on this show, watering every day for 5 minutes doesn't do anything but cause problems.
And cost you money,
exactly.
All righty, so, want a break?
Well, we'll take a break. I got one more to say, too.
All right.
Yeah, I got plenty to say.
Looking forward to that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Coming back in a couple of minutes, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we are back. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show for a very nice Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, it's not 112, so it's got to be nice. But I've been speaking about how to keep your plants alive in the heat, how to protect your yard and your home from the fire, the types of plants that, are tough and hardy, and how to water. And those are critical issues, and you need to keep that in mind. And if you really like your yard and you want it to look nice, there are certain steps that you have to abide by so that happens. And if you do it from the get-go, it's not all that time consuming, and you keep it small and keep it neat, and just do a little bit at a time. It doesn't turn into some kind of a monotonous long-term proposition. Now, before the break, I was talking about if you had a sprinkler system and you were, you know, watering by sprinkler, and how to tell how much water was actually getting, you know, into your plants, and just to observe it, see what's happening, make sure that, how much time is the zone on, and how much did the water penetrate? Check the soil after the zone goes off. You have to add time, add it. Add 5 minutes and do it again. See what happens. You want to see how deeply the water actually penetrated the soil around the base of the plant. And like I said earlier, if it's not wet 6 to 8 inches deep, more time is needed, and maybe more days are needed. And as the heat moderates, just readjust the watering time and the days. It's like in April or, say, September or October, you're still watering, but you're not watering as much. You're just watering to maintain the plant and that it has sufficient moisture to live and to grow. And make sure, and again, when the sprinkler's on, make sure all the sprinkler heads are functioning properly. In other words, no clogged or broken heads. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of times we've got this clock, we set it up and we don't worry about it, and it goes on before we get up in the morning, or it goes on after we go to bed at night. So you never actually see the sprinkler system working unless you turn it to the manual mode, press the button for zone one, and watch zone one come on. And you go, I didn't know the water from that head squirted straight up in the air, and the rest of the heads on that zone are not operating at all. That's the thing you should do, and you should check it, especially in the summer when it's this hot. Check it once a month at least, maybe twice a month. It's not that hard to do. Just turn it on manually and stand there or sit there and say, yeah, each head is doing well. I got seven heads on that line, and each head is doing well. I know that zone one's good. Then you go to zone two, do the same thing. And if they're all functioning properly, you know, like no broken heads, no clogged heads, don't just assume that it's working exactly right. And always check your system first in the spring and then a couple times through the summer, and you're not going to have any plant materials that are going to all of a sudden go downhill and you can't figure out when the heck what happened. It was alive for 2 years and all of a sudden it just croaked and I don't understand what's going on, blah, 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 blah. And lastly, there's all kinds of sprinkler systems. You know, there's pop-ups and there's rainbirds and then there's drip systems and all that kind of thing. Well, the last kind of system that I don't even care for is the drip system. And if it works properly and you check the system at least once a month and keep it working, it's okay. The problems I've encountered as they get plugged up easily because the tubing is so small. And you get a piece of bark or a piece of soil or something like that, it stops. It stops the flow of water, or at least cuts it in half. And you wonder, well, what the heck's wrong with that plant? Well, you start digging around, you'll find the little tubing is plugged with something, or somebody stepped on it. Somebody stepped on it and crushed it because you can't see them because they're so small. And you might be walking around picking weeds and you actually step on one of these tiny tubes or one of the emitters, which are really small, and push it into the ground. It plugs up very easily and you don't know what the heck's happening. So, and then it's not putting enough water directly on that root ball where it's supposed to go. The plus part of the drip system is when it's working properly, there's no water wasted or evaporated on hot days, and the cost of a drip system is less than other types of sprinkler systems that pop up and rotary heads and things like that, and it's less labor to install. So it is a relatively inexpensive system in comparison to your regular pop-up systems and your rotary head systems and things like that. But it's also takes more observation to make sure that it's working for best results. And your best results, of course, will be accomplished by getting to know your yard and your plants. And once you know them, once you see how they grow, look at your yard with a critical eye, pay attention to how your plants are growing or not growing, and try to figure it out. Well, it may be a water issue, it may be a fertilizer issue, it may be a bug issue, but if you pay attention and specifically look in the evening, you just look around your yard, walk around the yard and say, well, everything looks about right, everything looks about the same size, everything looks like it's growing about the same rate, and let's say you have 10 of some shrub and you're just kind of walking and looking, and all of a sudden you see one that's half the size and some of the leaves are brown, there's obviously a problem. So you want, rather than have that problem spread to the nine healthy ones, you want to see what's bugging it. Is it a water situation? Is it a bug situation? Is it maybe lack of fertilizer or too much fertilizer? But when you pay attention to your yard, you're going to have a better yard. I mean, for instance, are the leaves droopy and limp? If so, water heavy, and the leaves will spring back to normal in a few hours. If the leaves are turning brown and crispy, then the plant is being overwatered. That's the easiest way to tell over water. And that's usually the biggest problem in newly planted shrubs, because people think they need to be babied and all that. Well, the soil around here doesn't drain as fast as nursery soil that they live in. But you want to double check by digging into the soil at the base of the plant. And if it's wet, don't water. If if a plant is in full sun all day, it'll need more water more frequently than a plant in, say, full shade or part shade, because it's going to be cooler in those areas. It's just getting used to your yard, looking around, paying attention to it. You know, each type of plant has different moisture requirements. So when planting, don't put a juniper next to a hydrangea, for instance. They're opposites when it comes to water. A juniper hardly need any water, and a hydrangea needs it every other day, maybe in the hottest part of the summer. And that's really important to keep an eye on that. Look at the sun, look at the exposure, look at the rate of growth. Easy landscape maintenance comes from good planning and knowing what different plants require for good health and growth. And the more you learn about it prior to the event, the more you study it and think about it, the better your yard gets. Like I said, a hydrangea needs more water and shade than a juniper requires, for instance. A juniper, you know, it can grow in a hot sun on a cliff, for crying out loud, where a hydrangea would last maybe 3 days in the same place, you know. And just like people, plants are unique and what they need and for good health. Everybody's different. So are the plants. They're different. They have different requirements. And again, good planning is important for landscape success. If you want to do your own landscaping, hire a professional for a consultation or a master plan. You know, ask a lot of questions and share your thoughts about what you want your yard to be long term. And then listen, take notes to what the pro has to say. Maybe there's a little bit of what the pro says and a little bit of what you say, and you kind of mingle it together and come up with your best result. I mean, that's what it is. Now, when I the first question I ask a client when they call me up for a consultation or a plan is, what's your long-term goal? What do you want this thing to look like? You want low maintenance? Do you want a shady landscape or a sun? Do you need privacy? Do you want an exotic landscape or
all of the above?
Or something plain or high maintenance? Do you need a garden area, a play area for the kids? Do you need a lawn? Do you want a patio, a deck, drainage? You know, all that stuff. I ask them these questions and draw the information out to them. Maybe they hadn't thought about a lot of those issues. Maybe they hadn't thought about a play area for the grandchildren or their children. Maybe they hadn't thought about, I might want to grow some vegetables. Where would it be a good place to put a little vegetable garden so I can grow tomatoes and peppers? When I first go to a client's house, they have some ideas.
Yeah.
And in general, they say, well, yeah, I would like this, this, and this. And then that's when I get specific and ask them, I try to enlarge their vision and say, well, this area here could take this, this, and this, and this area here could be good for A, B, and C. And once they hear what I have to say, what I'm going to share with them, then the ideas start to click in their mind, and they start firing back at me, and we come to some kind of a verbal plan and agreement, and then they'll either hire me to draw them a master plan or just pay me for a consultation. I do both. Then we can go from there. And when I draw a master plan and go over it with them, a lot of their own ideas are in there. And some folks say, I don't know. I don't know anything about this, but I want it simple. Okay, that's a good way. You want a deck? No, I don't want a deck. I'd like a patio. Okay. You want a sprinkler system? No, I like the hand water. So, just kind of general questions so that you don't over-design And a lot of landscape architects have this penchant for over-designing everything, putting way too many plants in, too close together, and too big to start with. I know.
It's ungodly.
Yes. And and I've looked at some of these, and I go, geez Louise, my gosh. Why did they put so many of such and such in? Because in 2 years, they're going to be crowding one another out.
Yeah,
it looks good initially, but, you know, after a while.
Yeah, after a while, it kind of outgrows itself.
We got a break?
We do.
Okay.
Our final break.
Final break of the day.
On News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
I can't believe we were talking about pedicures.
I can't either. Well, it's like pruning your toes.
There you go. There you go. You got to keep them trim, too.
You got to keep them going. They get ugly. Oh, gosh. Anyway, I was talking about, you know, planning your yard and what to do and how to ask questions, and especially if you've never done it before. It's good to have a vision, a basic vision of what you want, and then, like I say, you can share it with a professional, or you can read books or look on the Internet, whatever, but I found the best way to do it is hire somebody who really knows what's going on in your area, like me. And
there you go.
And get it right. And you know, because you have to know what the soil is like. You have to know what the drainage is like. You have to know, you know, what where the sun is the hottest, where is it shadiest. I mean, these are all pertinent facts that you have to take into the landscape and the landscape design. And because if you're gonna do it and you're gonna hire somebody to do it, or even if you do it yourself, it's still gonna cost you a few bucks, you know. Depending on the size of your yard, it might cost you $3,000 if you do it yourself, and $6,000 if somebody else does it, or even more than that.
Wow.
And depends again on the size and the scope of your landscape.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, sometimes when I ask that question, the client has no idea what they want, because they've never had a house before, or they just moved to the area from Arizona, you know, and
Timbuktu.
Yeah, that's a long way to move too. And so they need help. So I look at the project. If they don't know what they want and they've seen some things but they're not sure, I look at the project as though it were my own yard. And And how do I have a nice and functional landscape? How can I make it functional and pretty and beautiful at the same time, and not a whole lot of work that I have to work an hour a day every day for the rest of my life to keep it that way, you know?
What a pain in the...
Yeah, pain in the hands that would be.
It would be. Need a pedicure for those.
Oh, sure. But, you know, I try to make it an easy design for the people to understand, because whatever I say to the client, they're open to, you know, discuss it with me. You know, if you want one of these, or if you want one of those, or if you want this, there's this kind of tree, this kind of tree, this kind of tree. Give them some examples of the types of trees and how large they'll grow and what kind of shade they'll give. And you know, there might be some, you know, a few minor changes here and there, but the end result is finally just what they wanted. And I've heard that so many times. When we're ending a job, the client will say, "This is much more than what I expected. It's beautiful." And, you know, that's always gratifying to hear that.
I think we got time for one more call.
We got a call? Okay.
We have a call. Hi, you're on the air with Mike.
Yes, Mike. Is this a good time of year to apply a weed and feed?
Not when it's, I don't do it when it's over 90 degrees. I would wait till the temperatures, you know, kind of were consistent, 80 or 85 maybe. But you get a 90, 95, 100 degrees, it does more damage than good.
Okay. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
All righty. Thank you. All right, we have a couple of minutes left in the program.
Okay, well, anyway, I'm talking about designing your landscape and, yeah. And how to ask questions about from the professional that's there, and the, if the professional is on the ball, he'll ask you questions as to what your long-term goal is, you know, especially if you have small children, what do we do? I always, like I say, if they don't know anything, have an idea what they want, I look at it as, well, okay, if this is my yard, how would I treat it? I've got X amount of space. Yeah. I've got a little bit of shade, or I got wide open sun. What could I do, and how could I do this to make it attractive, simple, fairly low maintenance, and beautiful all at the same time?
Right.
And I always leave enough room for the client to add any plants, and I never over-design with too many plants because it's so much easier to add if you need to add after you've lived with them for a little while, a year maybe, and say, you know, I could use a couple more shrubs over here, or I could use a little more color over here. It's so much easier to add to what's already there than to have this brush pile that you have to clean up so you can see what the ground looks like.
You betcha.
Yeah. And I've done actually thousands of landscape designs here in Douglas County in my business life. And I always learn something new in each project. You know, you think, well, it's all the same. No, it's not all the same. You know, and often the client will ask a question about an aspect I hadn't thought about. And I make an effort to include their request or suggestion in the landscape plan, because if they like that particular plant, well, hey, I'll put one or two or three or whatever it takes to make a nice design if that's something that they like. That's very, very important. Or to explain to them why their idea just won't work.
Yeah, that too.
You know, sometimes that you know, you if you do that, these are the consequences of doing what you want.
Yeah.
Right there, because of A, B, and C, because it's too close to the sidewalk, too close to the house, or it will promote this or that, and after
it just
a while,
ain't gonna work.
It ain't gonna work. Is that the show?
That is it.
Well, thanks for listening. I hope you learned something, and it's always a pleasure to be on the show and share my ideas, and we'll see you next week. Same time, same station, eh?
You betcha.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.